It's the weekend, time for rest, relaxation, and another edition of New Wisco Weekend, a weekly look at issues, arts, entertainment, culture, and everything that makes New Wisco home. Now, here's your host, Northeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief, Lisa Hale.
The kids are back in school, and smaller school districts have to make sure students are fed and ready to learn. How do they do that? We have our cover story. The Truth Booth answers the question, what can you do for educators in your area? Amanda Nimmer gets nostalgic about school lunches. Conrad Krieger explores nutrition for the student athlete. We have stories on the Einstein Project in Green Bay and a drug use and abuse prevention program called Turn the Page. Pete Schwabe has his classic cinema pick of the week. And Brittany Merlot explores the difference between astronomical fall and what is called meteorological fall. Todd Michaels puts together a terrific back-to-school playlist, and later we'll introduce you to a high school music instructor who's teaching and touring with a rock band. First, we open up this edition taking you back for a lesson in how it all started. You may be surprised to learn Wisconsin set some of the standards for our public education system now and then. Here's Terry Barr.
The kids are back in class, but if the subject is school, let's talk about the history of the education system in Wisconsin. You may be surprised to learn the Badger State has been a leader in the free school movement, or what we call public education. Northeast Wisconsin has some big firsts. Let's rewind to get a better idea. It's the mid-1700s, way before the idea of any type of school system. Small groups of parents worked together to hire someone to teach their children a couple of hours a day. By 1791, a small, parent-supported school is built in Green Bay. Families eventually pay for a larger school on the west shore of the Fox River in the Fort Howard area.
The student-teacher ratio was 61 to 1.
That's state historian John Gerda. He says church-funded Indian mission schools pop up around the Fox Valley in 1822, and the first school paid for by community members pooling money together to pay for one teacher opens in Kaukauna.
The school was old, dilapidated, unpainted, and half unglazed, without playground or shade, and has not any kind of retreat for the performance of nature's most private and necessary offices. What they're saying is there wasn't even an outhouse.
An early survey shows when Wisconsin was organized as a territory in 1836, there's about a dozen schools with an enrollment of 500 students total. But the Wisconsin Historical Society indicates by 1849, more than 3,200 children are going to class a few hours or more and all across the state. At the same time, Marguerite Schurth is creating what will be known as the first kindergarten in the country, starting with a small class at her family's home in Watertown. That's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. Schurth learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was already common. It's not in America, and by 1856, her home kindergarten class is so large, she has to move it to a bigger space. Today, that building remains as a Watertown museum. Back in Green Bay, John Jacob Astor donates land on Howe Street, and the first city-owned school in the state is built. The legislature passes an attendance law in 1879. It requires 12 weeks of classroom education for all children between the ages of 7 and 15.
I think the real breakthroughs were after World War II. As the quality of life has improved, a huge part of the quality of life is education. You know, the system being envisioned as a K through college system, all publicly funded, and the expectations really soared.
So Terry, how does the Wisconsin school system right now? Can we even compare it to years ago?
Great question. And as you heard, Wisconsin really led the way in the early days of education. But there's good news now, too. A new study ranks the state school system as the fifth best in the country. Wallet Hub's survey focusing on quality and safety in public school systems in every single state. Things like student-to-teacher ratios, dropout numbers, test scores, and school safety plans. Our neighbors, well, they don't fare as well, with only Illinois ranked just outside of the top 10. And Lisa, Wisconsin is one of just six states with a graduation rate of more than 90%.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Sweet goodbyes. When you put me on the Wolverine up to an end. This is New Wisco Weekend on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS and the Civic Media app.
Nutrition for athletes getting ready for the school year full of sports is very important. New Wisco Weekend's Conrad Krieger now reports on how to maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Any sport comes with many aspects of the game: performance, muscular strength, muscular endurance, flexibility, and body composition. One thing they all have in common? Nutrition. Nutrition is very important to any athlete. I talk with Mark Hewson with Bell and Sports Medicine about nutrition in athletes.
How to get the energy in their bodies sometimes days before. You know, I think they have to look at what sport they're in. When do they need to perform? Is it a practice? Is it a meet? And what are you trying to do? So when I say that is, you know, if it's a football game and it's Friday night, you know, we just got through week one and saw some kids that were cramping and it was 70 degrees out. You know, it wasn't 90 degrees out. So it's a matter of hydrating days before. The same thing goes, what energy are you putting in to get, you know, protein and not fats? You know, you don't want something just sitting in your stomach and feeling like you got a rock in there. So it's very important to get that food in there in a timely fashion. And then knowing, hey, is this going to be used quickly? Is it going to be used long-term? You know, is my sport, are you running a sprint? And is that all you need to do? Or do you need to last for 3 hours? So there's a science to what are you eating? When are you eating it? And how are you using that energy?
My follow-up was, how important is it to stay hydrated throughout the day, especially like game days? It's super important.
Yeah, great call out. You know, here just yesterday, we were hitting the 90s and probably the hottest day of the summer. We did get storms earlier, but as we're doing this program, you know, it's low 80s, but getting real humid. And it's not about saying, oh, geez, now it's getting hot, I'm going to start hydrating. Because if you're already behind now and you have practice here in an hour or whatever, you're probably going to struggle just finishing the practice. You may cramp up, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, is cramping really that big a deal? It's just in your calves. Have a calf problem, you know, we sometimes all get them at the middle of the night and it's bad enough. Now get one on the middle of a field or a court, and then think about if it starts affecting you in your abdominals. That's when you know it's really serious. So yeah, it's a matter with hydration. You know, everyone says, what's the science with that? It's not a matter of just pumping your body full of fluid because you can overhydrate. It's a matter of how does your body use it? Your body and your stomach can only empty out so much water or liquid at a time. So for example, if it's just water, it's great. That's all you have. Water is great. But you can put, you know, you can use a Gatorade or a Powerade. You know, Gatorade's got product in there that's going to replace potassium, sodium. It's called electrolytes. And that's sometimes a key on these hot, humid days when your body is sweating and using up more of that liquid.
What kind of advice would you give an athlete trying to eat like a healthier lifestyle?
I think start slow. You know, I think sometimes if you start too quick and you get too aggressive, your body does want to hold to it. I think the easy one is hydration. Get rid of the sodas, get rid of the high energy drinks, stick with basic water. If you start drinking a lot of water throughout the day, yes, a lot of times you'll say, man, I have to go to the bathroom more. That's true. But water is going to be great for you. I think going to a balanced diet, eating breakfast, eating a regular lunch, knowing when, hey, your activity is, okay, maybe for, let's say, football at this time of the year, I have to practice from 3:30 to 6 o'clock. But on game night, now I'm playing at 7 o'clock. So you need to know when that food's going in and when is it going to be in use.
That was Mark Hewson from Bell and Sports Medicine. With New Wisco Weekend, I'm Conrad Krieger.
So
what was your favorite part of the school experience? For Amanda Nimmer, it was lunch. She joins us now on New Wisco Weekend.
It's time to head back. School's here. It's time to meet up with those friends, see who's changed over summer, what relationships are still going, who grew a foot, because that happens, and find out if your friends truly had a great summer. And now parents get to have a break during the day. The kids are gone. No one's moaning and groaning about having nothing to do. Nothing to eat. But as a parent myself, that means that I now get to have some homework every day. Ugh. That also means back to school activities are back, so you can kiss some of your weeknight evenings goodbye. But hey, we're going to miss these times at some point, right? Right. And speaking of looking back into those golden memories of school, back when you were just a lad or lass, perhaps you'll start feeling that nostalgic feeling of things that you miss. Could be a teacher that was your favorite, a subject that you wish you could go back to over and over again. It could be the friends and memories that we made along the way. But for me, it's the school lunch. Man, there are just so many different foods that I wish I could just easily have access to. And don't get me wrong, the thought has seriously crossed my mind of just going to my old high school or a high school in general and asking if I could just go buy some things for lunch. No matter how weird that sounds, the thoughts crossed my mind many times over the years. I may sound like a high schooler. I definitely am not a high schooler. But sadly, we can't do that. And all we can do is reminisce. Reminisce about those perfectly rectangular pieces of pizza that for some reason you cannot replicate or find in a store. Or those breakfast sandwiches, if your school was lucky enough to have them like mine. Those breakfast bagel sandwiches were bomb. And while Quick Trips all over Wisconsin's burgers and chicken sandwiches are a very close comparison to the ones that high school used to give, they still cannot and have not replicated what I knew as Fondy Nacho Grande. And you can ask my fiance because I will bring it up time and time again. Fondy Nacho Grande. It looked terrible, but it tasted delicious. It was this weird meat, taco meat and cheese solidification that was served to you via ice cream scoop, and you were happy. And of course, I know not every cafeteria in this state served the same stuff, but you can't tell me there's not something you're looking back on and you're like, man, that sounds so good right now. And oh my God, the fruit pizza. The fruit pizza. It was like some kind of sweet dough. It had cream cheese-ish kind of sauce, and it was piled with fruit. Delicious pieces of kiwi, mandarin oranges, blueberries. Some other piece of fruit I can't remember. Probably strawberries. School. If only we could go back, right, guys? So now I'm starving, and I'm going to go eat. From New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer. And there you go.
The mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station.
When we come back, school's in. Does that mean it's officially fall? Getting kids off to a great start in science education and our classic cinema pick of the week. This is New Wisco Weekend.
I can see you in the morning when you go to school. Don't forget your books, you know you've got to learn the golden rule.
This is New Wisco Weekend on Civic Media Stations WGBW and WISS. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Coming up, getting the kids off to a great start using science and fun in the classroom. Plus, we'll look at the difference between astronomical and meteorological fall. First, let's crank up the DVD player for Pete Schwabba's Classic Cinema Pick of the Week.
New Wisco Weekend presents Pete Schwabba's Classic Movie Pick of the Week.
This week's film teaches us the importance of the nest egg. The movie is 1985's Lost in America, a film by Albert Brooks about a yuppie couple in Los Angeles who decide to leave the rat race by a Winnebago to travel America and touch Indians. The story is set into motion on a knee-jerk reaction after Brooks' character David Howard does not get an expected promotion at work. He loses it and convinces his wife, played brilliantly by Julie Haggerty, that they need to leave modern society and find themselves. So they liquidate everything, and inspired by the film Easy Rider, decide to hit the road and spend the rest of their lives living off their nest egg. The couple's first stop is Las Vegas, where kids' college funds, matrimonial commitments, and nest eggs go to die. David Howard learns the hard way his wife loves to gamble, and the couple soon find themselves in the desert, left with only their Winnebago and pennies.
I understood the nest egg.
Well, please do me a favor. Don't use the word. You may not use that word. It's off limits to you. Only those in this house who understand nest egg may use it, and don't use any part of it either. Don't use nest, don't use egg. If you're out in the forest, you can point, the bird lives in a round stick. And you have things over easy with toast.
Watching the Howards weed through their penniless existence in the aftermath of the lost nest egg is as entertaining as it is funny. Lost in America is an absolute gem of a film with some of the most quotable lines ever. Albert Brooks grew up surrounded by comedy. His dad was a comedian and his best friend was Rob Reiner. He took the stand-up world by storm and found more success on Saturday Night Live with his short films. He's considered a comedic genius, and not just because his real name is Albert Einstein. After his first two films, Real Life and Modern Romance, achieved critical acclaim, Lost in America had a bit more commercial success, but was by no means a blockbuster. Brooks initially tried to cast Bill Murray in the David Howard role, and Murray wanted to do it, but was booked up for 5 years, so the writer-director himself stepped into the lead role. And I'm not even sure if the legendary Murray would have crushed it like Brooks did. He's that good, and so is the film. Lost in America is a treasure, and it's your classic movie pick of the week. For more movie and entertainment talk, join me weeknights for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe here on WISS and WGBW. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Pete Schwabe.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone.
You can feel it in the early morning hours and in the evening. The crisp fall feel is here. But when does fall officially start? That all depends upon how you measure it. Meteorologist Brittany Berlow defines the differences between astronomical fall and meteorological fall. Here's Brittany on New Wisco Weekend.
It's fall, y'all. At least for me it is. Uh-huh. Regardless, sweater weather is upon us. And the beginning of autumn season marks the end of warm summer days and the start of long, chilly nights. So what is the difference between the two dates that are set 3 weeks apart? Which one is right and which one do you follow? Well, most people flip the page to the fall season according to the astronomical, the fall equinox, which officially takes place on September 22nd of this year. It's based on how the Earth moves around the sun. And on that specific day, it's placed precisely where the length of daytime and nighttime are exactly equal. But since this shifts so much from year to year, scientists need to keep things consistent for climate record keeping. So, the meteorological fall already started on Sunday, September 1st. You know, when the first blast of that cooler air filtered in and now we're in the thick of a second snap. Meteorologists group the season of fall into 3 months, the brrr months, of September, October, and November. It's defined by the weather based on annual temperature cycles, and it's easier for keeping stats as it follows the calendar, making data more accurate and useful for agriculture and commerce. In the world of meteorologists, winter begins on a different date too, December 1st, while the astronomical change occurs on December 21st, on the shortest day and the longest night of the year. So really, you're not wrong on whichever day you choose to celebrate it. Or for some, like me, maybe it's both. But there is a set date that we can all see the harvest moon, which is the full moon closest to the flip to fall. The name dates back to the time before electricity, when farmers depended on the moon's light to harvest their crops late into the evening. This year's harvest moon is the last super moon of the year, too, which means it'll move closer to Earth and appear larger. It'll emerge on a Monday and will reach peak illumination at 9:30 at night on Tuesday, September 17th. And you autumn know, every tree dreads September. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Hey!
Not every child has access to robust STEM learning experiences, so the Einstein Project of Green Bay works to provide hands-on learning materials for thousands of children in the area through science kits that are loaned to schools and through the Makerspace in the Brown County STEM Innovation Center. Dennis Rockhill is the Makerspace director of the Einstein Project. He said he and two friends started the Makerspace 10 years ago.
Tim was involved in Destination Imagination. John and I helped coach robotics teams, so it seemed like a really good fit to bring us three together. But we really started to focus on youth and creativity development and just basically hands-on skills.
Rock Hill says that hands-on science learning provided in the makerspace really fuels a passion for science in young people.
I don't know if you've ever seen the model of the human body, you know, and how much of the brain is used for each body part, you know, but the hands of this bottle are huge. You know, they're like the largest part of the body, and that is because so much of your brain goes to controlling, you know, these digits and phalanges. The combination of working with your hands and doing creative work is super good for your brain and super good for, you know, just emotional and intelligent development.
Kim Lemberger is the director of learning for the Einstein Project. She said for the past 30 years, the project has brought creative learning and science kits into schools at all grade levels, from kindergarten through high school.
We've been upgrading our curriculum, and we have been continuing to evolve our curriculum to meet today's students where they're at.
Lemberger said getting Einstein Project kits and curriculums in your local school is as simple as reaching out to the principal or the curriculum director, who can then contact them. Programs like the Einstein Project in Green Bay also help to serve to inspire scientific curiosity in girls. Rock Hill says there have been some strides made with girls in STEM education, but more needs to be done.
You know, the push is still on, though. We're not there yet. So we need to keep doing everything we can to encourage that trend to move forward. So we still got a lot of work to do there.
Lemberger says the Einstein Project hopes to set up scientific knowledge throughout our communities.
And our goal really isn't to create little scientists or little engineers. It's to create scientifically literate citizens.
The Einstein Project operates out of the Brown County STEM Innovation Center at 2019 Technology Way in Green Bay. Learn more at einsteinproject.org. Coming up after the news on New Wisco Weekend, our cover story, providing school nutrition in the smaller school districts of New Wisco. Plus, a look at a different type of drug use and prevention program for your school. It's called Turn the Page. All on the way on New Wisco Weekend. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. This is New Wisco Weekend. For WISS and WGBW, I'm Lisa Hale, your host. It's time for our cover story. The kids are going back to school, and Tom Allen Swearingen is following his passion for cooking in order to supply nutrition to school kids in Wabino, a small town in Forest County. He appeared on Civic Media's Mino and the Mayor show recently, and here's a part of that interview.
Got a text here. Can you ask the guest if they have used local food for his job with the school district, farm-to-table type of thing?
Yeah, we do. Our main supplier is Performance Foods.
Oh,
Bino is kind of up in the sticks, so yeah. we don't really have to do. If we get a provider to come up there, we're using them. We do use some of the local farms that we're buying our food. The one thing that I found different this year is we're getting our milk from Minnesota now.
What?
Yeah, so the plant shut down in Wisconsin. It's not so much the milk, it's the milk cartons.
Really?
So the school, we could get milk, but you can't get it in the little cartons. So we're outsourcing it to Minnesota. That was different.
I don't.
Jim, you need to step in.
Yeah, we're going to get the governor on the line. Talk to the governor on the line. Wow. Hey, how's the food in school, in the schools, that big pushes for nutrition?
They changed the standards this year, too. So there's a lower salt, lower sugar content, and they're introducing vegetables and stuff into the breakfast meals. I just got a grant for $10,000 for improving breakfast. I was doing some training on, smoothies
Nice.
The big push.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make smoothies for 400 kids.
Hey. Yeah. Got some fresh strawberries. I'm going to make both you guys a Johnny Juice.
Oh, there you go. Awesome.
Yeah. Right.
I should incorporate that into my school menu.
Yes. I buy that protein drink from Costco.
Okay.
Okay. And I mix it with strawberries and bananas, And there's nothing better. I don't think there's anything you could eat that's better for you to start a day. Could you? I mean, don't you agree?
I'm going to sneak some spinach into the kids' stuff. Right? See how they like that.
I mean, the key.
I think that's awesome. You guys do that.
What you guys can do is make like the food that is like not so good taste really good.
Yep. And right. So it's like a scratch good chef cooking. Yep.
Does that? And yep.
When you were going to school, did you have breakfast?
At school?
Yeah. No, Pop-tarts. We didn't either.
Pop-tarts.
When did that? That's what I mean. Is bowl of Cheerios or something. When did this start with breakfasts at schools?
Well, see, now
which I think is a great thing.
Our school has always been 100% free. We're a community eligible school, anyways. Yeah. But our school has never made a child pay for a meal.
Oh wow! That's
so
phenomenal.
I've been there 9 years. I've never charged a student or a family for a meal.
That's fantastic.
Breakfast or lunch. So when I go to these conferences, they're like, how do you increase participation? I'm like, well, it's free.
Who would participate?
Smoothies.
That's awesome. What do you put in your smoothies?
So it's going to be strawberry, banana, yogurt. So it'll be, I'm not going to sneak the spinach in. I think I'll have a riot.
A little kale? Don't tell them that, but put it in there.
That's fantastic.
I think that's great how you can make healthy food tastes great. Because I think, you know, I don't know.
But let's be honest, too. I mean, you've been involved with this a bunch, Jim. There's a lot of kids that come to school hungry.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything to eat or nobody's.
There's something to be said for the most important meal. It gives them their energy, gets their blood sugar level where it should be, and they can, study and concentrate.
At our elementary, I think we did a survey with it, but we're about 90%.
Wow.
You know, to be honest with you, for when we were in school session for COVID, that kind of improved it because they had to come in groups. So it's suggestion. Super. You can eat breakfast, but you don't have to. Almost 90% of the kids take it.
Beautiful. The guy in Manitowoc at Natural Ovens who made the muffins? And he was like, well, these are brain muffins. You know, like they make it. It was really that they were eating breakfast, right? That made them, pay more attention and do a little bit better. So that's a really important meal. Do you do the lunch as well then?
Yes. It's breakfast and lunch at our school. We don't do the healthy snacks or suppers, but some schools do.
Right.
You can pick up your supper at a school.
Yeah.
Like what would be a normal meal? Because when I went to high school or even all the way through school, it was like every day, every week. Monday would be like sloppy joes. Next day would be such and such. Next day would be. Thursdays were great because it was pasty day, which was awesome.
We called that pizza where I went.
But you guys, the variety you guys have now is amazing, right?
Yeah, we do some scratch cooking. We get some of our food from commodities, so your chicken tenders, corn dogs and things, all the fan favorites of the kids and stuff. But I do make from the restaurant I grew up in, my mom's lasagna.
Oh,
so then
it's
like my mom is a lasagna.
Oh, I would love that.
What grade are the school you're at? What grades are they at?
Oh, so actually our school has daycare. So we have infants on up to seniors in high school.
And this is where Wabino, did you say?
Wabino.
Do you let some of the students come in and see? Do you have any work study for the kids to come in and help you in the kitchen and learn a little bit?
We do have some of that. That we kind of limit the access to the kitchen.
Yeah. That'd be fun for a kid, though.
Culinary? Culinary. That's a big thing these days.
Well, the Preble they got it going on over at Preble. I mean, they've done so many things. They've been to so many events, and you look at that stuff, it's like, wow.
Early in my career, I worked at UWGB, and the nutritionist used to come in and see our production sheets, and so I was actually conducting a class.
That's a fun career because you're making people happy because most people like to eat. And if you can do it right and get the nutrition, I don't know, sneak it in there for kids, but, tell us old people about it. But I think it's...
Right. I think it's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome what you're doing. And I want to get back to when you were in Kuwait and traveling all over the world. Did you get any Wisconsin product that's like, did we send any cheese over there?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. 100%. That must have made you like really feel like...
I brought cheese curds over and people went crazy over there. I was in Afghanistan giving these kids cheese curds and they were going insane.
Yeah, you'd be amazed at how much of the DOD buys Wisconsin product.
Swearingen was a guest of the Mino and the Mayor show, which airs every weekday from 6 until 9 a.m. on WISS 98.3 FM and WGBW in Green Bay at 97.9 FM. I want to run through the halls of the high school. I want to scream at the top of my lungs. I just found out there's no such thing as a real world. Just a lie, got to rise.
Make sure and like and follow our stations on Facebook. Search for WGBW or WISS. Like us, follow us. You can also search for Mino and the Mayor on Facebook. like and follow them as well. This is New Wisco Weekend.
What are you passionate about? What's on your mind right now? Those are the questions that we ask with the Civic Media Truth Booth when we go out and about in New Wisco or when we have someone come into the studio. Vanessa now tells us her truth on what you can do for educators in the area.
For us, for like as parents, as school board members, as community members, just like showing and just making sure that we are being advocates for those teachers and just letting them know, honestly, like small things go such a long way. Those small tokens of appreciation, just sending just a text message to your child's teacher, you know, as school year starts, it means so much. Those emails, those positive things, we deal with so much in the classroom. It is not the same as it used to be 20 right. years ago. It is, the job is immensely hard. It always was, but it keeps getting harder. Because life just keeps getting harder, right? And these kids just need more and more and more support. And we need to continue to give our teachers more and more and more right. support, too.
Oh, wow, man. Wait a second, man. What do you think the teacher's going to look like this year?
Getting all those back-to-school supplies together can be a headache. But what can really be a backache is an ill-fitting school backpack. Melissa Kay reports.
The start of the school year is right around the corner. Helping your child fit their backpack correctly is important to avoid neck pain, headaches, and other injuries. Megan Stankowski is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with Aspirus Health.
A backpack should be positioned on a child's back with both straps used around the shoulders. The backpack should be at the hips or no lower, and shoulders should be snug tight so the backpack is not swaying side to side.
Megan said parents need to check in with their child to make sure they're not experiencing any issues with their backpack.
Asking their child first, hey, how do you like your backpack? How does it feel? Because the child's not going to relate any pain or anything like that to the backpack.
Children shouldn't carry more than 15% of their body weight in a backpack, and it's important to load the heaviest items low and near the center of the back. I'm Melissa Kay.
Young teacher, the subject of schoolgirl fantasy. She wants him so badly, knows what she wants to be.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale. In just a few minutes, we'll have a story about a band director turned rock star. But first, I'd like to take a look at a drug use and abuse prevention program that is a little bit different from the typical ones you find in schools. Douglas Darby and Jacob Jensen came from different backgrounds. They both battled addiction. They've recovered and now have created Turning the Page, a drug use prevention program that works to normalize the discussion around substance use disorder and mental health for students. Darby and Jensen are experts in addiction, treatment, and recovery. They've shared their stories of experience, strength, and hope with over 300,000 people to date and counting. They focus on providing what they call an alternative to ineffective drug use prevention programs. Adolescents face issues with mental health and substance use and abuse. And Darby says the important thing to remember with students and adolescents is that trauma affects us all.
Me going through a loss, you going through a loss, that pain may be understandable, but it's not linear. When I got my life together as a 28-year-old, you know, grown man, it hit me that I still dealt with all the issues that I should have been dealing with when I was 15 years old.
Jensen says his story starts with a lack of connection to others.
You know, when I was growing up, I got picked on. I got bullied a lot. I felt like I was excluded from that group of friends, and it drove me to look towards substances. I didn't fit in with the peer group. I fit in better with the adults in my life at 13 than I did with the kids. And, you know, when the adults first handed me that beer and I drank it around the campfire, I thought, wow, I fit in. You know, I feel like an adult. And it was that idea of connection, that this connects me to people.
Darby and Jensen both have a history of substance abuse and addiction that led to jail terms. Darby said he had to be a 7-time convicted felon before he found the motivation to get the help he needed to break his addiction. Darby robbed 2 pharmacies in Green Bay and was jailed for almost 5 years.
I begged for a second chance, you know, and I got that. But when I went away, what was the difference? Well, the difference was after the detox and stuff, I got to find out who I was. And that was something that I ran from since my dad died at 15.
Jensen says he was a hedge fund manager with billions of dollars going through his hands at 20 years old. When he was arrested for the first time, he was wearing a suit. It took him some time to reach the turning point as well.
I was facing 57 and a half years in prison for distribution of a little less than a half a gram. And it was at that point where my lawyer said, Jake, you've been making enough bad frickin' decisions. And I cleaned up the language, but you need to get some help. And I decided to go get some treatment. And that really taught me, okay, there's some steps and things that I can do to start rebuilding my life.
So now Darby and Jensen go into schools and use the TRUTH presentation they've created. It stands for Teaching Resilience Using Trust and Honesty. Darby says they bare their souls to students for 90 minutes, holding nothing of their story back.
We relive those hard days. You know, I'm up there talking about, you know, the suicide of my father and, you know, the day that I walked into those pharmacies and robbed them, the day that machine guns were put to the back of our head and we were arrested. We talk about that to show that pain is still real.
It's about that connection, you know, and after we speak, they're more likely to access the resources that are already available in the school.
Darby said creating a community is the best drug use prevention program.
When we talk about changing the world, I'm talking about the 3 minutes it takes to walk from math class to science class. That's the world I want to change.
The students are connecting with the program. Jansen says students are presented with a non-invasive survey after their presentations, and he says 99.7% of the students said the presentation helped and they should continue their work in schools. The drug use prevention program doesn't eradicate the need or the want for the drugs as a way to escape, but Darby says they can offer better coping mechanisms.
We know the rate of success if kids just wait. So again, we're going to let them, you know, get through the survival part of growing up and hopefully give them better services than we receive.
Darby and Jensen were guests on Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning 6 till 9 on WGBW and WISS. Rock.
With the kids being back in school, Wisconsin law enforcement agencies are asking drivers to keep those children in mind by being alert and cautious, putting down the phone, obeying posted speed limits, and sharing the road with young pedestrians. In addition to stopping for buses with their stop arm extended, motorists should also stop for school patrol officers or crossing guards that are holding up a stop sign. It's a good rule of thumb to remember, children are nearby anytime you see a school bus or school campus. Coming up, a high school band director who moonlights in a rock band. Terry Barr has that story next. This is New Wisco Weekend. This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale. So raise your hand if you took any music classes in school. Yeah, me too. One Wisconsin high school band director is an inspiration to his students after wrapping up a busy summer touring with his own band. His own rock band. Terry Barr catches up with Ben Jagger as he transitions to his other role as a teacher. I heard you on the strangest frequency.
We are listening to a bit of the song Strangest Frequency by the award-winning band Sunspot. Now, the group's lead guitar, keyboard, singer is Ben Jagger. Ben, I just want to say welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Terry.
You are also an award-winning music instructor at a high school level. Now, when I learned that, I was thinking, now, how cool would it be to have a teacher like Ben? What actually made you decide that you wanted to not only be a rock star, but be an instructor too?
Yeah, what a great question. And it's kind of cheesy. It was a motivational speaker that came to my high school, but he was playing Whitesnake while he was talking. So I was willing to listen. And he said, you can do whatever you want with your life. And, you know, at the time in high school, I was playing like 5 hours of guitar a day. And I'm like, I love music more than anything. As I continued to go through high school, I started tutoring my brother's friends in math, like 3 years younger than me. And I found it super rewarding. And I find that I get the same exciting feel that I get on stage, you know, when the audience like really gets your music, you know, where they throw fists in the air for the solo or they're like singing your lyrics or something. I get that same feeling when a light bulb goes on in a kid's head and like the understanding is there, particularly when it's music related. Like, here's this the thing that I love. How can I teach students to love it as much as I do?
Let me ask you, as both a student of music in your younger days, and now as a teacher, what have you found that music does for a person?
I still consider myself a student of music. Rachmaninoff said, music's enough for a lifetime, but a lifetime's not enough for music. If you ever think you play a piece perfectly, well, how boring. That just means that you haven't found enough to study in that work of art.
And, you know, they always talk about how music helps people. And I'll go with your students, too. Their mental health. You mentioned math, that it really is one of those, I don't know, can I call it a special study that brings everything together?
Yeah, you bet. The social emotional learning that students experience in arts classrooms, you can't get anywhere else. A lot of the push in our district, our state, our country these days is around social emotional learning. And like we've been doing that in music education for decades, centuries. So seeing a kid that's maybe, you know, experiencing joy, well, how do you express that? You come and you sing about it. You come and you play about it. You paint about it. You know, maybe a student has a lot of trauma in their life. How do you cope with that and not feel alone? Well, why don't you come and sing about it? You play about it. You come and draw about it. The absolutely invaluable, the arts education that kids are getting.
Now, you instruct, wow, concert bands, symphonic bands, you give lessons, you do the hard things too, like music theory. Woo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you bet.
And as a high school teacher, do you think you have a favorite thing to help your students learn?
Well, I'm following in the footsteps of predecessors who have said, we spend too much time just doing. We need to create the next generation of music lovers. Like you want to see bodies in seats at concerts, you have to teach them to understand the music. And therefore, like the love of that music deepens.
What about now? You're at a point in the early part of the school year, so you're probably getting kids coming in with a different summer's over mindset. How do you get them back into the groove?
I think we all feel it as educators. I know the students, you know, feel a mix of excitement and nervous about, well, how's it going to go? So you picture an ideal situation, and then you make that happen. So in a music classroom, we spend a lot of time just developing community and trust. To make really great music, you have to, as a team, you have to trust each other. It's the same thing I do on stage with Mike and Wendy. I know that they have my back, you know, no matter what. So like you create that community. Well, how do you do that with 40 students, you know, holding metal and wood things that they've only been playing for, you know, 3 to 6 years? That's the part that, you know, I've spent a lot of time developing. But I think it all starts with people, you know, that we all love this. And then the music comes out of that.
I think, and this is one thing I remember, after a concert or a show, like a Sunspot show, there is nothing better than that feeling of knowing you've done it and you've done it well. And I'm sure in your case, you get some parents that come up to you and say, oh my goodness, I didn't know my kid could do that.
During and after, there's just an electricity about a musical performance. If I can share that experience. I've served thousands of students in Madison for 25 years. If I could share that with them, I'm honored.
I am talking with Ben Jagger, and Ben is a high school music instructor, and he's also with that rockin' band Sunspot. Have any of your students ever had the chance to see you play with Sunspot?
They find me eventually, the ones that want to. Mainly fans of the kind of music that we play. We write compelling lyrics and melodies. You know, we sing in harmony, but we got big guitars, big drums. And, you know, so I think fans of music that speaks to a lot of people, that's fun, but has a serious side too, like, you know, would enjoy hearing us play. And so, yeah, I mean, there's no secrets. Like Alice Cooper hid his identity from his high school chemistry students. If a student has an interest in what we do, well, yeah, okay, well, here's how you get your songs registered with the U.S. Copyright Office. Here's how you get ASCAP to collect your royalties. You know, here's a pathway to be expressive with the music that you want to write. But yeah, they'll show up sometimes in, you know, big signs and stuff, and it's all super fun.
Is there anything else that you want to add?
Keep supporting your music programs. Keep supporting your arts classes. We need the support. There need to be more of us. You know, there need to be more kids taking advantage of free access to a music education. That's why we're here.
So we talked about you playing a big guitar. We're going to end this with the song I'm on Fire. What can you tell us about this song? Wow.
Spontaneous human combustion pretty much sums it up.
Thank you so much. I hope you have a super school year. And here we go. I'm on Fire from Sunspot. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Terry.
We'll be right back. for being a part of New Wisco Weekend, your look at the stories and issues facing Northeast Wisconsin. New Wisco Weekend is produced by Todd Michaels, written and directed by Lisa Hale. Features correspondents Terry Barr, Conrad Krieger, Pete Schwaba, and Amanda Nimmer. Special appearances this week by Melissa Kay, John Mino, and Jim Schmidt. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, please email me and let me know. Lisa.Hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS and WGBW. Be unstoppable.